now, your Chilpack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lairness.
Phil, Dean, what will it be today? Now intercontinental, LA to Australia. It's your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. It's your Chilpack Hollywood Hour.
Chilpack Hollywood live event of the week.
So, Dean Haglund, tell me about the big paper laugh show. How did the first night go?
Well, it was a bit of a thin crowd, but it was fun. And now it's going to be exciting because there's a big press launch of the new season of the theater. So it should be a massive crowd this evening.
So when you say a thin crowd, I mean, you're saying that people who carry a little more weight about themselves tend to give more freely with the coin of the realm? Is that what you mean?
See, that's exactly what we're saying. We're trying to, you know, not distinguish between... No, I mean, the audience size was small because, you know, marketing. It's all marketing around here.
It's all marketing around there. In down under, everything's about the marketing.
It's all marketing.
It's so corporate. That's the thing that really surprised me about you going to Australia, is it's so corporate down there.
That's right. That's all they think about. Oh, well. But it's fun.
So tonight, a big show that's going to go great. And how many more weeks do we know that we're going to continue this show?
Well, for sure, we got 2 in December. And one more in November. So 3 more weeks for sure.
I think you should do the one in November before you do the ones in December, even though you're listing it later. Yeah.
See, this is probably what's wrong with my marketing plan.
Exactly. I'm no marketing genius, but I do believe list the closer dates first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take that into consideration.
We used to have production meetings. Now we have marketing meetings on the air. went to a live event, which was a Q&A following an advanced screening of a movie called Concussion. And what a terrible name for a film, Concussion, is. But I guess if you call it head trauma, everyone will automatically assume it's a musical. but it's about professional football, and it's about the cover-up that the NFL has systematically participated in or caused, run by many of the same people who worked for Big Tobacco, by the way, to cover up the fact that according to their own actuarials, and who knows if their own actuarials are actually accurate,
Accurate.
They may be on the low end. But their own actuarials show that 28% of professional football players will, sustain a significant brain damage, brain impairment, and will die from CTE. So that's more than 1 in 4. And when you think that the average professional football player only has a career spanning 3 or 4 years, wow. So anyway, so it's a movie about the doctor that exposed this and whose career and life and the career and lives of those around him who supported him were ruined by the NFL to try to silence his message. He was naive, thinking that all you had to do was show the science. I would imagine some climate scientists feel the same way. And it's Will Smith playing the doctor, Dr. Omalu, Bennett Omalu. And it's a very good film, getting lukewarm reviews. or not lukewarm reviews, very mixed reviews. The reviews are either quite positive, saying that it's an important film, but boy, I was stunned by how many are panning the film. And I saw the movie. Is it a great movie? Maybe not. Is it a very good movie? Yes. And again, is it an entertaining movie? Yes. And is it an important movie? Absolutely. So why are so many critics who tend to be liberal panning this? And then it sent chills down my spine thinking how many of those media outlets for which they write depend one way or another on money from the NFL.
Wow.
So I can't, I'm not going to do that expose, but it, I got to tell you, you know, when you pick a target as a filmmaker that is politically important, don't most critics tend to bend over backwards complimenting the film because of its importance and kind of ignoring its flaws? Isn't that usually what they do?
Absolutely.
And so this was not the case. But anyway, the Q&A that I attended afterwards was from involving the star Will Smith and his co-star Albert Brooks. And I brought this up because, Dean, I never got to see Albert Brooks in person do stand-up. And I feel like I got to that night. The way he riffed off of Will Smith was so fantastic. This man is so sharp. And really such a keen observer and commentator, it was thrilling to get to watch him just relaxed holding the stage, you know?
Wow. And what venue was this at?
This was at the Directors Guild of America.
Oh, my gosh, nice and intimate.
So, you know, one of the things that you would appreciate about this film, in addition to it being, you know, a target leveled against a sport for which you hold no particular love or...
That's true.
And you know what I was realizing about... it's not that I dislike football, but I certainly don't have any affection for it the way I do basketball or baseball. And I suddenly realized how odd it is to me that it is America's most beloved sport when you can't even see the faces of the participants.
Yeah, isn't that true? It's that they're all guarded in masks and chin straps. And
Other than, I don't know, fencing. It's the only... You know, well, hockey for a long time, they didn't even play with
goalie hockey.
Yeah, but they used to not play with masks at all. But it's the only sport where you can't join in on the human drama playing out on the faces of the participants.
Yeah.
Which for me is so much the part of sports.
Yeah. And it took them forever. I mean, I think it was when they first... focused on Joe Namath and redid how the camera work was done on football games to get that human drama.
But they don't because they're faceless. They're all robots. They are all robots. but what you would love is it's virtually a who's who of great character actors you and I have been celebrating on the show in this movie, including Eddie Marzin, and including. One that you singled out early on, one of your go-to character actors who has never been better, David Morse.
Wow.
He plays real-life Pittsburgh Steeler center Iron Mike Webster, who died under really horrible circumstances. He became homeless. He became a joke. He became someone everyone rejected. He became violent. And only after they did a full autopsy did they realize that he was ground zero. He was the first case that they found, and they named CTE. And then it turned out all these other everybody. Every former football player was dying of this. But when he goes in to see the doctor who used to be his team doctor begging for help, the team doctor is played by Alec Baldwin, and Will Smith revealed that Morse and Baldwin ad-libbed completely this entire lengthy scene. And it is so there you go. It's one of your favorite character actors, Dean, doing some of his best work. And it's all improvised.
Wow. Well, now I might just see it just for that scene, frankly.
Yeah, yeah. And Albert Brooks, as you said. Albert Brooks might get an Oscar nomination for it as well. But I mentioned Alec Baldwin. It's not his best performance, but he's always so good. And I don't know if we've mentioned, but he would be Even though, you know, you think of him sometimes as still as a leading man, he really, for the better part of his career, has been one of these go-to character actors that we celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. Think way back to Miami Blue, where he's a gangster. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, of course.
So good at that. That's the first time I've noticed him ever on the screen, and followed his career from there on in.
I mean, if I may, some of the supporting performances that I not always great films, but in David Mamet's State and Main as the movie star,
yes,
surrounded by other great character actors as well. Along Came Polly. He is so funny in that Ben Stiller movie. He's worth the price of admission.
In the urinal, rubbing the earlobe. Oh my God.
He did a movie based on a real life FBI case that we talked about on the show once before, where the FBI made a filmmaker believe that he was getting his first movie financed because they were trying to infiltrate the Teamsters, and it's called The Last Shot. And he plays the FBI agent pretending to be a producer. So funny. Of course, a little film made by yours truly, Karl Rove, I Love You.
Right.
What about the Scorsese films, The Departed and Aviator? So great in these. But you know, two of those titles that I just mentioned, he gets several scenes with the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. And Philip Seymour Hoffman's final movie came out this weekend.
Right. This is Hunger Games Part 2.
Mockingjay Part 2. And, and I saw it this evening. And
put it in context, I forget, you're not a fan of The Thing, but you liked how well some of the movies were made.
Well, I found the first movie and the premise of it and the execution of it really offensive. But I found the second movie to be very, very good. The third movie not to be a movie at all, because, you know, they just used like a half hour material from the book and stretched it out over 2 hours. And but I thought this was very good. This was the other good movie in the series. So 2 of 4, pretty good. And sadly, Philip Seymour Hoffman is not in much of it at all, because they just didn't have much material for him.
Oh.
But, I have to increasingly just give you either props or to say that that Dean Haglund dogged by cunning foresight, because it was several years ago when you said, if you're making an action film and you don't have a female lead, don't even bother. Right.
Right.
And here we are, 2015. More and more filmmakers seem to be catching on to this idea. But also, I was struck by how the female driven action films this year are the ones that really resonate. You know, the best action movie of the year for me is Mad Max Fury Road. And although she doesn't play the title character, Charlize Theron plays the lead character.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, we've had Spielberg's Bridge of Spies come out a couple weeks ago. We had James Bond return to cinemas. But the one great spy film this year was Sicario, starring Emily Blunt in an action role.
Yeah, absolutely. And talk about great go-to. I mean, think of her with Tom Cruise in what I call Live, Die, Repeat, Edge of Tomorrow.
Right. She got her action bona fides in that one.
Absolutely.
no doubt. You know, we could talk about like all these films, Bridge of Spies and Spectre, and maybe we will next week, and we'll talk about, again, like we promised, the Writers Guild list of the 100 funniest screenplays, and we have some great emails from listeners that we'll get to. But I really wanted to get into depth about what I was realizing, because when you said that about women in action films, it was as a storyteller saying that. But now, as kind of a cultural observer, I've been thinking a great deal about the positive cultural ramifications that will take place when this change really comes over, when women are at least considered the equal to men as warriors in films.
Oh.
You know,
there's a culture shift that would happen when we start viewing that as gender equal, like you have no trouble seeing either gender in that role.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it was like when, you know, when Barack Obama surprised so many people by beating Hillary Clinton and the Clinton machine, right, during the primary season. It's hard for people to remember that nobody gave him a chance, right? And it was Dr. Nikki Monti, who appears in our film Truth Is Out There, who said, you know, mark her words, Obama will beat Hillary Clinton. And the reason that she gave was the fact that movies with black presidents and TV shows with black presidents either did better box office or got better ratings than their counterparts that had women presidents in it. And what she said is that reflected what was going on subconsciously within our culture, which was we'd already accepted the idea of a black president, but we hadn't yet accepted the idea of a female president.
Wow.
So when these films, and you know, Hunger Games is certainly a major step in this direction, as is, look at how these YA series, Divergent, female lead, right? Hunger Games. So these young people are growing up already believing that women stand side by side to men, equal to them as warriors. And it, you know, there's so much violence around the world and so much warfare. But I was thinking, you know, the moment we actually accept that women are every bit the equal to men as warriors, well, then there will be no resistance to women fighting side by side in equal numbers to men in wars. And and what will be stunning to me then is that the question will go from, should they be soldiers and combat soldiers, to, well, do we want them to be? Because we'll already know they should be. But then we'll actually have to ask ourselves, do we want our sisters and our daughters killed?
Huh. That would be a shift.
Do we want mothers, sisters, and daughters killed? Because there is some sort of inherent belief that we have that warfare is a way of proving a certain kind of masculinity.
Right.
But when we see women dying in combat, might that not change the way we view the whole activity?
Wow. That could very well be.
And we don't have to face that because we're still arguing that they probably shouldn't be in combat situations.
Well, exactly. And you know what I see then? If that question comes up and that's answered no, then that's a shift to a drone, robotic, Boston Dynamic, four-legged creatures out there running 50 miles an hour with gun turrets on their back. Sort of a cyborg war.
Which is possibly the best way to describe what football of the future will be.
Cyborg war. I love it already.
Well, I'm serious because, you know, that stat that I gave you about, you know, what the violence does to the brain. What if the studies continue and find that the rates aren't that much smaller for those who simply played college football?
Wow.
Well, at that point, you know, you got to believe a lot of parents are not going to be letting their kids play high school football. And if they don't let their kids play high school football, there is no college football. And if there is no college football, well, then the pros are either going to have to be robotic football, or we're going to go and get participants out of the third world.
Right, and just do a bionic enhancement.
No, it'll just be immigrants. It'll just be, this is your ticket to America.
Wow, that's even more disturbing, I think.
There's a positive spin for you to look at. Anyway, you know, violence foremost foremost on my mind. And as I promised, I recorded a really amazing interview with a very creative man who has developed an anti-bullying app. His story that led to this and his inspiration behind school curriculums he is currently writing to try to educate healthier choices than violent ones is inspiring. And I think our conversation was very entertaining. And I'd like to go to that now, Dean Haglund.
Let's hear it.
And we'll talk about all these manner of movies and get to our voluminous emails on next week's show.
Excellent.
My name is Brian Rolfing. I'm with Watchdog Creative. I'm a St. Louis dad that 30 years ago, almost 30 years ago, a contact had left a message on my phone, the old cassette deck days, and he didn't hang up properly, and he left almost a full 60-minute tape of him beating his wife. And it's been a kind of a fire in my belly. I'm a home builder. I'm a realtor. And about 3 years ago, I saw a connection that was going to enable my idea. And everything just created this wild creative confluence here in this little town of Webster Groves, just outside of St. Louis. Now I have 11 volunteers, and we put this together, and October 1st, we turned the lights on, and it has just had staggering results.
So, Brian, since you introduced the original inspiration, could you tell me, I mean, I know about it, but could you tell our listeners a little bit about what happened when, I believe, you called the authorities and reported that message?
I was a developer in an area in this inner city of St. Louis called Benton Park and Soulard. And I happened to have been very good friends with most of the police officers around the area. It was called the Third Precinct. And I called my friends right away and said, hey, meet me over at the police station. You got to hear this. And it was on a Sunday, and I met over there. And, you know, the silence that was in that room when they dropped that cassette deck into that cassette player and we listened to it, my good friend, the police officer, put his hand on my shoulder and said, we've already been out to talk to this woman. You know, neighbors heard all this, and we're kind of frequent flyers there with all the calls. And said, this isn't your evidence. This is hearsay. She already said she just fell down the stairs. And he advised me that the man was dangerous and that I was just inviting danger into my life and into my family. You know, as a young man, and as I guess anyone, we always ask the question, why doesn't she just leave? Or why doesn't she just stand up to the situation? Here I was, a young, strong man in construction, fearless, as we all are in the age of 20s. And I still gave a second thought about endangering my life and standing up to the situation. And since then, the laws have changed. But what I have always thought is it's important to set boundaries. And to right away say, you're not talking to me like that or treating me like that, this is something this app does. When you're ready to change your life, this app can collect evidence. You can download the app, and as soon as that person calls, it will turn on, and you'll have a choice to push the record button, and it will go immediately into the cloud, so a lawyer we'll see a custody of evidence that's been unbroken or unchanged.
I want to get into the app in more detail. I also, you know, I'm struck in hearing your inspiration. And by the way, do you still have that cassette tape?
No. As a matter of fact, my very good friend that is now I believe, the head or chief of police, and I think he's since even retired. He really wanted me to destroy it right there.
Wow.
He said, it's real important to me for your safety that we're all dedicated to protect you and to protect who, her. He said, we don't know what this could do to ignite this situation.
Wow. Yeah, to make it worse because...
Had, you know what? Talk about emasculation. I had to pull that cassette, you know, all of that tape out and throw it in their trash can. And I did have to come back and face my wife afterwards. And she had heard it all. And I said, honey, this is the advice we've been given. And of course, I got away from that man immediately. But, you know, the disempowerment of life and of situations and also checking in and saying, is this really happening? You know, we've all been in volatile situations with people and we just almost go, is this really happening?
Well, I mean, you know, the violence, especially this kind of violence, especially, you know, in abusive situations, relationship violence, always motivated by feelings of powerlessness on the part of the perpetrator. We feel powerless and we seek to control and exert influence in an effort that, you know, an ultimately unsuccessful effort to make ourselves feel powerful. We might feel powerful in the moment, but then, but then we see the aftermath and we get plunged into even greater feelings of powerlessness, and hence the cycle of violence escalates and continues. But it's visited upon not just the recipient of the violence, but as you point out, on the witnesses of that
violence. It's global. It's global. It spills into the children. And I know this might sound silly, but even that man's dog was afraid of him.
Oh, you
know,
sure.
I mean, craziness. The important thing is we as a society have lost a little bit of our boundaries. I was born in the 50s, and I was raised when a police officer approaches me, it's yes, sir, it's no, sir. You know, it's a total succumb. You know, my authority is done. I don't want to get political, but I will say, even when a president is speaking, for someone to interrupt him and say, you lie, you know, you don't respect the police officer. You don't respect the man behind the badge. You don't respect the president. But you know what? The person, the title is worth something.
How can we expect, honestly, anyone in any walk of life to inhabit their office, to embody their responsibilities with a sense of respect, if we don't behave in respect?
Exactly. And when we talk about a perpetrator, there's victim-perpetrator reversal. With pedophiles, with abusers, they were probably a victim. And it's their coping skill. I've been on many shows about bullying and about domestic violence. And there appears to be this odd mystery that I think as a man, we're kind of obvious. You know, these football players come off of this athletic endeavor, you know, just meeting face-to-face other men. And alpha. And they're lifting weights. They have adrenaline. And when they get off the field, there's a transitional period that isn't taken care of. We used to call it shaking off a character in psychodrama, sociodrama.
Of course. The danger of actors identifying with their roles.
Thank you. Can you speak for just a moment, unlock the mystery for me and anybody that we're going to present this to? When you're playing a very violent, emotional, powerful character, and you're slipping gradually into the cool bath of your own life, what is that like? How does that work?
It requires a great deal of infrastructure to be able to to delve into the messiness and the darkness that is within all of our human makeup.
Yes.
I mean, here we are talking about violence. You know, violence is a part of all of our makeup. Violence is a part of nature. Violence is neither good nor bad, nor right or wrong. If you turn on a weather channel, you can't hear these days a report about a storm without someone saying it's a violent storm. Mother Yep. Nature means no ill intent by it. It's part of our makeup. But if we define violence as any act, energy, or force that injures, harms, or destroys, boy, we all have that. And it manifests itself not through just physical violence, but through speech, through emotion. So as performers or storytellers, if you are going to delve into this, as I think we should, because our job Yeah. is to explore in, as I always say, the job of storytellers, be they actors, writers, directors, painters, is to do the very dangerous work in a safe context, so
Yes.
that we delve in and we shine a light on that which is in all of our makeup. And in so doing, we allow the collective to change our relationship to those aspects. But the personal toll that you're alluding to, look at many actors who do not come out of that darkness. So
Yeah.
it requires a great deal of work, of developing infrastructure, of developing tools that allow you to look at that, whether those tools be therapy, whether those tools be meditation, religion, whatever works for the individual.
Right.
But
whatever coping skill.
But it requires a great deal of tools. And anyway, I'm struck by your use of the word boundaries, because I was thinking about, you know, the fact that, well, as you alluded, we know now in culture, I think we're pretty aware, as opposed to maybe in the 1980s when this first came to your attention, right?
Right.
I think we know now that the people who perpetrate violence often had violence perpetrated against them.
Yeah.
But what is stunning to me is that an even greater number of people who perpetrate violence witnessed violence perpetrated against their mothers when they were
Right.
young. That's an even more damaging event, because it literally strips the idea of all boundaries away from someone. It tells you that there are no rules in this universe, and that
Right.
no quarter is safe. Because what do kids want more than probably their own safety? To know that their mothers are safe.
True.
And if they learn that their mothers are not safe, how does that destroy any sense of a society built on rules, built on boundaries?
Right. And my grandpa, that was a very, very tough stepdad of my dad's, would tell me, trouble finds trouble. You know, and it feeds off of itself. And you're right, the role modeling of response and of coping skills is kind of where I'm taking this company, though we are a for-profit. Watchdog Creative is full of family guys, you know, moms and dads that are wanting to empower a new culture. I'd love to talk to you more about shaking off a character. I would love to talk to you more about my concepts of positive peer culture. We put a spotlight of the classroom of the bully or the child acting out, and they're in the spotlight, they're in the limelight. And then what happens is the real rock stars, you know, the academic rock stars or the computer game rock stars or whoever we have in that room, they disappear.
Yes.
And instead, we should raise that classroom up to the highest level achiever and let that bully, that person, as you have eloquently said, start seeing the right way to behave and the joy and the beauty of simplicity.
And I think that's possible. I mean, I've worked as a violence prevention specialist here in California, or volunteered, really, for almost a decade now. And people will always ask me, well, do you really think that, you know, you can change behavior. And it's not that I can change behavior. It's that every individual can learn new choices, because violence is learned. And at some point, the message got through to perpetrators that violence will work for them.
Well, and they, Phil, and they're, I'd like to share something with you that I want to just mention. I used to have foster boys. I lived at the Springfield Children's Home with my ex-wife and I, and I also worked at the Springfield Children's Home and Edgewood. And I used to tell my boys that anger is kind of like standing at the refrigerator and feeling hungry, and you take a little piece of cold lasagna or cold pizza or cheese, or and you just aren't quenched. And then you drink apple juice and you go, oh, I wasn't hungry, I was thirsty. Well, that's what anger is.
Absolutely. It's a surface emotion covering up a deeper need.
Very good. Now, at one hand, we want to say, you know, the dichotomy of what you just said that I just want to mention to you. We want to say that we are animals, and that anger and fighting is part of being an animal. And we know that that's nature. But then we have the nurture of how we want to actually respond to that. And there's a tender walk, because I will tell you, I know what a white bread ketchup sandwich tastes like. I know what it's like to be poor and not have enough food. I know what it's like to be around a bunch of rough crowd and have to be not the tender soul anymore. So I'm an artist. I play the guitar, and I'm a wood sculptural artist. And understand that some of this is a cultural survival instinct that we're not being credible about as our society erupts like Ferguson, Florissant, 20 miles north of me. When we talk about the cultural conserve, the group that we hang with, trouble finds trouble, you hang with a bunch of artists, what do you get at the end of the day? You hang out with a bunch of cage fighters, what do you end up with?
Well, although in fairness, you know, even as violent crime continued to drop across decades, you know, as you saw this, one kind of violence continued to increase across the board, and it knew no boundaries in terms of socioeconomic class, and that's relationship violence.
Right.
You know, you walk into any high school in America, and one out of four of those teen dating relationships you will find there involves abuse and battering. One out of four.
Yes.
And so it does not know, again, the feelings of powerlessness, especially, and what makes us feel powerless? Vulnerability. And who feels more vulnerable than young people, especially in the face of big, powerful emotions?
Right, a teenage boy.
These know no socioeconomic boundaries. So it really is, again, about getting back to this classroom model. It's about getting people to realize that vulnerability is not a weakness. Vulnerability is the gateway to true strength.
It truly is. And, you know, it's the birth of creativity, too, because once you feel vulnerable about that blank page of creation, I used to teach, I wrote a thing called the Creative Critical Path, and it was your journey of the approach to the blank page and how you master that blank page as your own. And I found that the disruption that we feel about getting out of our comfort zone is where I'm starting to write this new school program. I'm writing an experiential school program that I'm copywriting, that I'm going to allow nationwide use. And it's going to involve experiential learning. And it's going to involve watching the experiential learned process. And we're going to listen to that crowd of kids, and we're going to observe them in the positive and the negative. And we are going to accentuate the positive.
Well, let's talk. I have so many. I have so many questions that I'm inspired to ask. But let's get into detail right now about the app. What the app does, how people can obtain the app, and what you need to help the app change the way people use the internet. Because I love this idea that one of the things that erodes boundaries is this belief that we can be anonymous through the internet, right? The internet allows for such great anonymity and bullying and allows us to seemingly vent all our darkness in such a safe, anonymous way. And now you're using those very tools to shine a light.
Well, exactly. And gosh, Phil, you and I could talk forever. I wish you were my neighbor because this app enables a couple of things. One, the sense of empowerment that says, I got it here when I need it. So I tell people that even if you're not in the middle of midst of trouble, when a conversation goes awry or someone is not listening to your desires, like a collection guy, you know, I owed some people money and the guy kept calling me and he was awful to me. This gives me an ability to push that button. It records it. It goes straight up in the cloud. It is not stored on this phone. Screenshots of social media, all your texts are in there in a chronological manner. This gives you an ability to, I will say, if it becomes a case and you're going to seek a lawyer, it will find the lawyer. It will give you great representation. But if you need a therapist that says, I want you to overhear this and help me through what I've been through, I want with this app an empowerment tool that, first of all, you got it when you need it. And then when you record stuff, it's going to stay up front if you like, which is usually, I think, the best. Stay up front. Hey, that's it. This is boundaries. I'm not taking this anymore. I recently had a woman call me across the country. It doesn't matter where she's from. But she said, my husband beat me terribly, and we went into counseling. And if we would have had this tool, it would have been less time, I believe, because he would have heard how he sounded.
And that, Brian, is often the difference between life and death. There's no way to stress this fact enough. Time is often the key because, you know, it is so difficult for people to break out of these violent relationships. Some people, as you alluded, will say, well, I would never let myself be treated like that. Yeah, until you are. And then you find the reasons why it's so hard for people to leave. They are numerous, too numerous to mention here. But what we know is there is an average amount of times where someone actually leaves a violent relationship and is brought back into it before they finally leave for good. And the sad thing is that the average number almost always results in death.
Oh, and what a horrible, you know, we've all had that where we've lost a friend and we asked ourselves, how many times could we have intervened or empowered? So I told this woman, have your husband know that you're gonna have this app. And if it goes awry this time, you're going to have evidence, and it's going to be grounded evidence. And she was like, wow. And she cried.
Well, a lot of times, knowing that we are being watched, knowing that we are in the spotlight, knowing that people are paying attention, not because they have an axe to grind, but because they're actually looking out for our best interest as well, will inspire us to at least pause and maybe make a healthier choice in our behavior.
Yeah, choices. The other thing is this can work as an intervention also. We've had several people that have bought the app for their friend and said, you know, I'm sponsoring you in this app. I turned the lights on October 1st. So I guess, what does that make us 50 days old?
They said they said you wouldn't last.
Well, I got to tell you, I've been asked to present. Dr. Phil is looking at having me on the show. I'm honored to talk with you. We have the Megan Foundation here in St. Louis was just a very tough, terrible act of bullying where the little girl committed suicide. We have non-for-profits contacting us nationwide to use this as fundraisers. This app was a simple machine with a simple message. And you're not alone.
Absolutely.
You have an ability.
Well, this is why I'm honored that you would talk to us, even in the shadow of the giants like Dr. Phil knocking on your door. But it makes sense, and I'm glad that you embody the truth of this, which is, yes, we need people who have the reach of millions to be talking about this, but we also need grassroots, because the point is we are all in this together.
Well, we are, Phil, but I would what intrigues me about you and me and Roger, our friend that put us together, I sometimes wonder how, as artists that are kind of oysters out of the shell sometimes, we're so tender, I wonder how we balance in society. I feel like my answer is I my coping skill is I play the guitar, I play the piano. Or I do a sketch. I approach a blank page. I create a wood sculpture. And I feel empowered. And I feel a beginning, middle, and end. And a critical path, if you will. And when you're in trauma, you have a tendency to fall back on that critical path of survival. And this app fits within that critical path. You know, you start getting your tools together. Tell me how we as artists survive in a terrible world.
Well, I do believe it's entirely this impulse that says the only healthy response to an act of destruction is an act of creation. And and you did just that. Now, maybe it's taken decades to gestate and to get to this form. But you're an example of this, that you responded to the literal act of having to destroy that tape by getting creative. And that's, if nothing else, look, I believe firmly that the creative arts are incredibly significant, that the humanities are here for nothing less than to make us all a little bit more humane. But if nothing else, if creative artists embody for the entire population that when problems seem insoluble, it's time to get creative with them, then we've done our job. Because just as violence is part of our own makeup, just as the impulse to destroy is part of our own makeup, so too is the impulse towards creativity part of every single human being on this planet.
Boy, I love that you put the spectrogram of hot and cold and creation and destruction at polar ends. I love that. And I wonder if you and I should try to meet a challenge together to get more creative people involved in this concept.
I would love that. And you know, many creative people listen to this show. We are always kind of humbled by the talents and the achievements of people who listen to this show. So before we go any further, Brian, why don't you tell our listeners, how can they find you? How can they find the app? And what do you need from them? How can they help you?
Very good. Awesome. First of all, you can contact me at brian@watchdogcreative.com, or you can go to the site and just, you know, contact us and just put to Brian. It'll come straight to me. You can find the app on Google Play. We're going to be iPhone probably by end of December, mid-December. We are needing investment money. I've been bootstrapping this. We are looking for investors. I am not wanting someone just to write a check. I am wanting investors, seed money, if you will, of people that have the fire in their belly like I do. I don't care to change the world. I would just like to change a classroom. I would like to be able to say that we do have children that are observing the wrong way to live and the wrong way to respond. And I do also believe, I don't think that's on the shoulders of teachers. I don't think that's on the shoulders of pastors, preachers. I think it is the creative nature of us to create an experiential workshop that is full of playback theater people or storytellers or guitar players or jugglers. In this school program, I'm going to be calling out on the juggling community, and we are going to teach kids how to juggle in front of other kids, and then we're going to listen to the response. And if it's negative, we're going to call them on it. And if it's positive, we're going to award that. We are going to get back in this society with Watchdog Creative to learn and relearn and use the tool of the app to set boundaries. You know, I had a contractor, a lady up the street here that hired a contractor. He was paid in full, but he was not completing the work. And she was a single lady by herself. And he would not leave a damaging message on the phone, but he would say awful things to her on the phone, terrible things, threatening, you know, her. And I just gave her the app for free. She downloaded it. The one time it answered and it said, I'm recording this and I'm considering this harassment, it's being kept as evidence, the man apologized and said, I am so sorry. This has been a misunderstanding. There's no misunderstanding. He was a perpetrator, but he was covering his own ass at the time.
Yeah, although, you know, a lot of times that's the thing that, you know, that keeps these cycles of bullying, of violence, of abuse going, is that the person will apologize and, you know, the person on the receiving end will say, well, they really seem to mean it. And you have to say to them, of course they meant it. In that moment, they meant it. Of course they're sorry. There's part of them that does not want to be the bully.
Well, God bless you. And, you know, I was raised, if someone's angry at you, don't take it personal. It's probably their problem, more their problem than yours. But here's the thing. Setting those boundaries, and then after that, the statement is never trust the dog with your lunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we're done. We are not going further. You've already breached your trust with me. I've told you that's it. You've apologized. Now go away.
The phrase that I learned from a teacher was, you know, yes, you should have love and compassion for every human being you meet. That doesn't mean you have to invite them over for dinner.
Exactly.
Right? Well, Brian, there's so much for us to talk about, but and maybe we'll do it again in the future. We can check in on a regular basis.
I'd love this. I'd love it.
I wanted to share with you two things that I was struck by, but I wanted to save them for the end. The first is late 1980s. I was in college in Los Angeles, and my roommates and I heard a sadly repeated incident every night with the neighbor family who lived upstairs of, you know, the boy crying out. You could hear him trying to run away from someone, and then it ending with a loud thud. And we, you know, called the police, and the officers came, and they more or less came to us and said, look, could you guys stop calling us? Because, you know, your neighbors upstairs are from a different international culture, and that's just how they deal with things there. And I'm pleased to believe that we are now at least on the precipice where of saying, you know what, it doesn't matter where you're from or where you live, there will be no safe quarter for certain ideas.
You're in my house now. That's right.
You know, and that you know, certain ideas will not be invited to our dinner table, and that is that it's ever healthy to try to control someone's behavior through violent means. But I'm struck because it was roughly the same. It might have even been the same year that you got that tape.
Same powerlessness. Very much.
And then the other thing is, when we're talking about creative people and exploring these energies, the day a couple weeks ago now, maybe a few weeks ago, when Roger first introduced us and we agreed to, at some point in the near future, you and I, sit down for this chat, no sooner than later that afternoon did I start receiving anonymous, threatening, bullying, extortive phone calls from someone I don't know. And wow. I have had stalkers in the past, but this was really intense and really sudden. And one of the things that I always lecture my acting students about is, when a role comes your way, even if it's an audition, start paying attention to everything that comes forward and realize that everything that comes forward is in service of that performance you need to give. Yes, yes, it might be something that you need to tend to in your personal life, but our impulse as humans is always, why is this happening to me? And as creative people, we have to think, why is this happening? How does this serve us?
And how can we make it work?
And it often serves it's often exactly what the character needs, what the character needs to be feeling. This is kind of the for lack of a better word, the magical alchemy that comes forth with creativity. And so at first, of course, I was terrified by these calls. And then by the time I got to my class that night, I was laughing because I realized, wow, look what I had manifested by saying, I am looking forward to sitting down to discussing these topics with Brian. I manifested the very energy that we're discussing.
But Phil, I want to share with you quickly. I don't know how much time we have, but I got it. You're so amazing here. Two things: you turned a negative into a positive learning process, and that is what an artist does. You know, we play off of the shadow because we love the light. You know, it's part of artfulness. When I worked at the Springfield Children's Home, I used to tell a story to the boys, and I believe it's true. When the forestry department would grow these white pine saplings that they give away because they're indigenous trees to the area and we got to get them back because of forestry. This is in the 70s, maybe it's changed. But when they would grow these saplings, they learned that if they gave it sunlight and rain and soil, if they didn't shake the pot and give a fan blowing on it, when they put it out in the real world, the storm would just break the stalk because it wouldn't have a good stalk. So I would get these white pines for free from the forestry department, and I would plant it. And sometimes I would plant it in my yard or the children's home yard. I got in trouble for doing that a few times. Or we would just go out on a hike and plant it. And I would tell those boys, your pot's been shooken. It's been shaked. You have a good, strong stalk because of what you've been through. And they knew, I knew what they had been through, whether it was physical abuse, sexual abuse, or neglect. They came to me with their pot very well shaken, beyond what you and I would ever want to confront. But I would turn that into a strong man, a strong person, and we would plant that tree and revisit it. The story sounds rather charming and wonderful until you realize I was there for quite some time, and some of those trees would die for some obvious reason. So I was known to go out and buy a sapling. And I can remember my wife saying, Brian, you got to stop the story because this is getting kind of high maintenance. But the point of what you said is very similar. You have your pot shaken to get you prepared for that next endeavor.
That which wounds us ultimately can be what heals us.
That's right.
You know, and nature is replete with examples of this, examples that unfortunately humans all too often seem to ignore, like the importance of letting kids play out in the dirt outside to build up antibodies.
Yeah.
You know, we're so concerned about keeping people and things safe that we ignore the reality of what you're describing. Which is we build up strength by learning.
So you asked what you could do for us at Watchdog Creative. We are just 11 volunteers, including me, and we are doing our best to get this app up and running. We are getting daily texts and calls and emails and Facebook, thousands of Facebook, stating that we're going to save lives. We need armament. We need help. We need as much roll up as your sleeve as possible. Though I will say, I think Phil and I have a future down the road of a call to arms for creative people that are willing to write, rewrite examples of coping skills that we don't have in our society. That we need to enrich in and empower. So there's the call to arms. Artists, come, make something happen. App builders, dot-comers, contact me. Let's build this into an empire. Let's do and empower the disempowered. Let's be ready and armed for anything. Let's be fearless. And let's take the time to create and not destroy. I love that teeter-totter, Phil. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, destruction is going to come our way. There's nothing we can do about it. so let's just welcome whatever it is that wants to come forward as an opportunity to get creative and to deepen our connection to the nourishing truths of what it means to be human.
Let's get all Bing Crosby on it and accentuate the positive.
Well, that is a thorny example given the physical abuse he leveled against his kids. But that will...
Is that really true?
We will save that for another day.
What a great enticement. Now you got me Googling that guy.
Bing Crosby apparently not... No, I grew up, you know, Bing was everybody's dad or granddad, and boy, my parents can't bear the thought of watching him anymore. My parents are, you know, they're old, and they realize, wow, this is who we all looked up to. So, yeah.
I forget you got a little bit of star historian in you, don't you?
Oh, you know, yes. History is the story of people, and I find nothing more fascinating than people.
Oh,
all right.
Phil, we got to talk again. I love the confluence, the energy of you and I together. We can change lives, just you and me, but you and I can change lives with the other thousands that are about to be behind us.
Absolutely. Brian, thanks for taking the time, and I will let you know, obviously, when this conversation's up. And we will be in touch soon. You can find every installment of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour at chillpackhollywood.com. C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K Hollywood.com. You can download them, stream them, subscribe via iTunes, even write a review. As Dean Haglund would say, what could be more fun? Please write us, chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. Tell us what you want us to talk about. And we'll be glad to do so on the show. That's one of the things we mean when we say it's your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. Thanks to Empire State Gas for sponsoring us, Blog Talk Radio for hosting us, Fanboy Nation for carrying us. Please follow us on Twitter, won't you? We're at Dean and Phil, and like us on Facebook, facebook.com/ChillPackHollywood. Until next week, I'm Phil Lernis. Be good to yourselves, everybody.
belated spoiler alert.